I cannot freaking speak.
All right, tongue's numb from all the lemon wedges.
Yeah, exactly.
Ladies and gentlemen, make yourselves comfortable. I am Kent Garrison.
I am Brian Gill.
And I'm Richard Barden.
And this is Mad
About
Movies.
Da, 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 da.
You sound insane. You realize that?
Yeah.
The whole world got crazy.
Are you serious? Ladies
and gentlemen,
it's showtime.
This is a show where we take you on a journey through the world of cinema. Isn't that right, Richard?
Yes, Mad About Movies is a show where we walk you through all the latest happenings of the week in the world of cinema, as well as break down a movie for you in the last half of the show. So feel free, if you haven't seen the movie, to stay with us and through the spoiler point, pardon me, and we'll let you know, and then you can just hop off and we will break down our movie of the week. If you have seen that movie, we'll listen along and break it down along with us. We, of course, can't hear you, but, you know, it's better that way.
It is. It's very good. Brian, please tell the listening audience what the movie is for tonight, sir.
This week we're going to be talking about Best Picture-nominated film from Steven Spielberg, Lincoln.
We're stepped out upon the world stage now, with the fate of human dignity in our hands. Blood's been spilled to afford us this moment. Now, now, now!
Stay tuned for Lincoln. If you haven't seen Lincoln, don't worry, we will give a spoiler alert, like Richard said. But tonight, coming up on the show, we do have weekly recommends, we have some movie news, and, yes, of course, our review of Lincoln. So let's get things started off with a little bit of movie news. Brian, what has been going on in the world of cinema lately?
The big thing for me this week was just came down a couple of hours ago. We're recording this on Tuesday night. The next Marvel movie is called Guardians of the Galaxy. I believe it's supposed to come out August 2014. Right. We got Iron Man 3 this year, and then Thor later this year, and I think there may be another one early next year. But the next big standalone movie is Guardians of the Galaxy, and today they cast Chris Pratt from TV's Parks and Recreation in the lead.
Wow, I hadn't seen that.
Yeah,
huge. So is this the role that was going to go to what's his name, Jim Sturgess?
I'd heard Jim Sturgess, and I'd also seen Joseph Gordon-Levitt and Zach Levi from Chuck.
Okay. I heard JGL too,
or at least rumored or something at one point or another.
So this is directed by James Gunn. So first big studio movie by him.
Right.
So what else is to be? I don't know anything about really Marvel Comics.
Yeah, I didn't know anything about this series either. I've got a friend who's a super comic nerd, and we talked about it a little bit, and then I read a primer today, and it's much more similar to Watchmen than it is Avengers. Have you guys – I can't remember if y'all have seen Watchmen.
Yeah, I watched it.
Oh, I've read it. I don't think
I watched it a few days ago, actually.
Okay.
Yeah. Watchmen is one of my favorites.
I don't love that movie, but I think it's more of a gritty, kind of sarcastic, darker take on the superhero.
Oh, totally. Yeah. Very adult.
And that's where Guardians of the Galaxy, I think, is supposed to be going. It's kind of a hodgepodge from what this little recap or a little blurb I read about it. And again, I haven't read the comics, but it appears that it's kind of a hodgepodge of guys that maybe weren't big enough to have their own comics or line of comics or anything like that. And they just kind of threw them all together. So this
doesn't take place in the Marvel films universe that we've come to know over the last 5 years.
This is going to be phase two of the, it's going to, In the Guardians of the Galaxy, from what I know, the newest incarnation, which is 25 issues, it started in 2008. So basically when they started planning that they were going to do a movie, they put out a comic series, 25 issues. And the last issue, spoiler alert here for that, Iron Man joins up with the Guardians of the Galaxy.
Okay.
So I can imagine Iron Man 3 is going to do its thing, and then Guardians of the Galaxy is going to come out. Maybe Iron Man joins up with them, a la, and then maybe Guardians of the Galaxy join up with Avengers and Avengers 2. Who knows?
Yeah.
And in one 19-hour-long masterpiece.
Right. Yeah.
Okay, well, that's exciting. What else do we have news-wise?
There was some Star Wars news this week, Brian. Do you know what I'm referring to?
I think I might. Go ahead and let it out. Let's see what we're going with here.
Something About Yoda. I think that'll ring a bell.
Yeah. Oh, starring Cameron Diaz.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, first standalone movie, supposedly, or at least
supposedly.
The first standalone movie that they're going to do outside of the upcoming trilogy is potentially going to be a Yoda origin story, I'm guessing. So
do we have any idea on a release date or anything as far as that goes?
I was a little surprised to see they did say that initially I anticipated that they were going to get this trilogy out of the way and then start doing standalone movies. But the release I read today made it seem like they might do their first one's going to be this J.J. Abrams directed one, and it's supposed to be 2015.
Okay,
but that the Yoda movie could come at any point after that.
Okay,
so they could it may be in between the first and second of this new trilogy, or you know, at the end of it, or just kind of up in the air at this point. And of course, it may not be true. It may not be something that they end up doing. But
here we go. Here's some news that just broke actually a couple hours ago. Regarding this, headline is, this is via /film, Disney confirms standalone Star Wars films.
Oh, wow.
And this is the quote from Disney CEO Bob Iger. I can confirm to you today that, in fact, we are working on a few standalone films. Larry Kasdan and Simon Kinberg are both working on films derived from the great Star Wars characters that are not a part of the overall saga.
Okay.
We'll plan to make Star Wars 7, 8, 9 roughly over a six-year period of time starting in 2015, but there are going to be a few other films released in that period too.
Wow.
So I bet in between each of these, there's probably going to be a standalone, maybe multiple. Which is very exciting.
Good, because they need a way to, you know, really monetize this and make some money. These standalone films should really help with that.
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, an underappreciated genre, I feel like, and franchise. I just don't think enough people know about it. So.
Exactly. No, good for them for figuring out a way to make a little more cash.
I mean, J.J. Abrams got the big gig. But I can imagine a lot of directors being attracted to these little standalone, these character pieces, you know?
Well, and I think this is the opportunity that, you know, we talked last week about how there was a lot of outcry on the internet for people saying that they, you know, they were upset about the J.J. Abrams pick because they wanted to see Disney take a chance and have a Darren Aronofsky or somebody like that direct a Star Wars movie. And that just wasn't going to happen for the franchise. So I think it would be great to see even like a Ben Affleck, like we talked about last week, or somebody even similar to like what James Gunn is doing with the Guardians of the Galaxy for Marvel, and just have some of these standalone, maybe not the Yoda one, because that's a pretty big one. But regardless, some of these standalone films on a smaller budget with a director that maybe is a little less known, a little more risky, and just kind of see what happens. I think that would be a great thing to see from the franchise as a whole.
Mm-hmm.
I gotta say the the Guardians of the Galaxy Chris Pratt news has melted my brain. That's crazy. I got to say, I am a fan of him on Parks and Rec. Really, really funny. But he was so good in Moneyball and in Zero Dark Thirty.
Yeah.
And that's really good casting there.
Mm-hmm. Right.
That's a star in the making.
Cool to see him kind of skyrocket into that same stratosphere. I mean, when you end up getting the part that potentially was going to go to – you know, somebody like JGL, that kind of shows where you're at in this world, because there's really very few actors in Hollywood right now that I think that are hotter than JGL. And so I think that's really cool, because I'm with you. I love Parks and Recreation. That's one of my favorite shows. And Chris Pratt's character is maybe the best part a lot of times. I love that character. So I'm excited to see what Chris Pratt can do in a role like this. This is pretty cool news for him.
It is. Speaking of JGL, I'm thinking he couldn't do it because he's got other plans.
Right.
You know what I mean? Yeah. As far as a superhero movie.
Right. He's got to leave himself open for like for Daredevil 2 or something.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's what are your thoughts on
Daredevil 2?
Yeah.
Or maybe, you know, some sort of I think he could play Bullseye in a spinoff.
Or really go against cast and maybe do like Catwoman 2.
Mm. So
I think that would
He's very acrobatic. That could be perfect casting.
It's true.
No, but who do you think is the front runner for the Justice League? I think details are going to come out probably pretty soon. What have you guys heard about the Justice League rumblings? Anything?
The only thing I've really seen was that they were going to basically wait and see how Man of Steel does before
moving
any further than what they've got at this point. I think they've probably got a – if they don't have a script, they've got somebody writing a script, I think, right now. And then I think the goal is hope that Man of Steel just does gangbusters at the theater and go from there. I did see something the other day that was like potential – I don't even think it was actors. I think it was just characters that might end up being in this version of the Justice League. But I'm not sure if I paid much attention to it because now I can't recall it off the top of my head. But
remember the oft-rumored Jennifer Lopez Wonder Woman movie from about 10 years ago?
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Yeah.
That's what I'm hoping for.
Right.
In this,
you know, they've been trying.
I couldn't care less about Justice League. I just really don't care.
Really?
Yeah.
Superman and Batman? To me, that this ranks almost above Avengers hype.
I don't really trust DC unless no one's involved.
Right.
And I don't know. I just feel like Superman and Batman, I don't really like when they try to mix them because they're so different. I think they almost belong in their different universes.
Right.
They don't merge as cleanly as – and I'm not like a comic book guy, so I'm not going to even say like, well, the structure of Marvel is far better for teamwork and the structure of DC is about man for man. I don't really have that either. But
that's pretty astute analysis for not being a comic book nerd. That was great.
Well, thank you. I do my best. But so I just really don't care. I almost don't want them to do it. I don't know. I don't want to see Batman for like another 15 years. That's just me personally. Right.
You know, that,
I'm less excited about this than I am Avengers because Superman bores me. I love Batman. Wow. And I like some of the side characters, but Superman, I'm interested in Man of Steel because they've done a great job so far with the trailers of making it look like the Superman that I want to see. But Superman is just boring to me because he's so all powerful that there's very few things that you can do to have a plot, you know what I mean, that actually makes sense.
Dean Cain is involved, I'm out.
Right, yeah. There's only so many times you can do the origin story, and that's the most interesting part of Superman.
Right.
Exactly. Right. Yeah. I've got 8 seasons of Smallville. I'm good.
Yeah. Yeah, this one has Kevin Costner, so we're good to go.
That's true.
Locked in.
Good point.
I heard earlier that one of the front runners for Batman is Armie Hammer.
That'd be interesting.
We'll see how he does in Lone Ranger, but from the looks of the trailers, the Lone Ranger looks like it could be something pretty special.
The new trailer from Super Bowl was much better than any of the previous ones. I was thoroughly unimpressed with the lead-in, the first two trailers that we saw.
So was I, yeah. But I'm talking about
the new one.
Super Bowl one looked.
Yeah, that looked much better. Can I just say, it's Johnny Depp. I mean, that's all it is to me. I if there was almost anybody else in the role of Tonto, I think I'd be interested. But Johnny Depp he bores the crap out of me these days. I just feel like everything he does is the exact same. And he's so talented, he could do so much more. But that just looks like Captain Jack Sparrow acting like a Native American, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know.
I've always said that eventually Johnny Depp's going to do a movie where he doesn't have to have white paint on his face. It's like he's had white paint on his face for the past 4.5
years.
He's
doing – his next film he just signed on for is a bioflick of the 90s wrestler Sting.
Really? Oh, yeah.
And then – no. That's
oh, I thought you were serious. And then like another white face.
And then he's doing a Kiss biopic where he plays all 4 members of Kiss.
I can see his next movie is he's going to play
a gangster, like a Boston gangster.
Yeah, Whitey Bulger, the guy, the Jack Nicholson character from Departed.
Yeah, the
guy
like the younger version. Yeah. Yeah, that
and
could be cool.
That interests me a little
bit. He's got a mime movie coming out too, I heard.
Yeah.
Just got to keep in theme, you know?
Yep. No, I like it. So, Brian, you had an accidental, really good segue there.
Yeah.
That was totally intentional.
Totally.
Okay, so you mentioned the Super Bowl trailer.
Yes.
Of, you know, Lone Ranger.
Right.
There was another Super Bowl trailer that piqued our interest quite a bit. A certain, you know, we talk about Star Wars, The Dark Knight, you know, the Marvel series as the great series of our time. But I think we leave out a very crucial a crucial series in I know my adolescence and adulthood, and certainly yours, Brian. And can you go ahead and inform our listeners what that is?
We're of course talking about the great, the one of the most underrated franchises of the last, I don't know, 100 years, something like that.
The Mighty Ducks.
Nope. Even better.
Right. The Fast and the Furious
yes.
series.
Wow.
Yes.
The most exciting franchise in movies right now, I think, something like that. We're gonna definitely do a full podcast on that series when the release date of the newest one gets a little closer. I just made an executive decision. I haven't talked to you guys about that at all. But
no, that's, I'm in. So
we're definitely gonna do that.
What did you think of the Super Bowl trailer and now the 3-minute one that came out today?
Yeah. Well, let's just say I've been pretty psyched up all day, and I've just been pumping iron. I mean, I'm just really excited. That was all that
I've been in. I've been in push-up position.
Yeah.
9 a.m.
Yeah, I've been hanging out on my chin-up bar just all day. I'm so buff right now, guys. I can't. I've been rubbing oil all over my body.
Okay,
right. Just trying to. And I ordered some HGH from Ray Lewis, and yeah. I mean, I've got 3 months to get my biceps looking good, and I plan to do it. I'm so excited right now.
Kent, what are your thoughts on Fast and Furious 6?
Well, I'm going to be honest with you guys. I think I've only seen the Fast and the Furious, the very first one.
Oh, my gosh. You've got to see 4 and 5 especially.
But yeah. I saw an article today called An Attempt to Make Sense of the Fast and the Furious Franchise Titles. And it's just funny to look at all the different ways they've tried to name it. So they have the Fast and the Furious, and then they have Too Fast, Too Furious,
right?
And then Tokyo Drift,
Fast, yeah.
And then
not part of the canon, but that's
Fast right. and Furious.
Yep.
And then Fast 5, and now Fast and Furious 6.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Are you trying to make a point? I think it's awesome.
You know, so, Brian, okay. Richard, no, Richard. Quickly to break down, since Kent hasn't seen anything since one, quickly break down how those play out. Because one is great. Okay, it's cheesy, but it's great.
You know, there's only two words that I need to know. Right. And in the last trailer said it all, vehicular warfare.
Yeah.
Right? Aren't you so? They have a tank, Kent.
That's all you need to say, really. I'm hooked already.
So yeah, I'll walk you through the last few. So Fast and Furious, or Too Fast, Too Furious, follows Paul Walker's character, O'Connor, as he sort of becomes more in with different gangs. He's now left. Vin Diesel is not in the second film because he's off doing, I believe, Triple X at the time, right?
Yeah, something like that. Yeah.
So he goes. And
or
so,
one of the Riddick movies.
That one's not. I mean, it's fun. The third one now goes to Japan following a new set of characters. And so we meet some new characters. It is kind of the Yoda standalone film.
Yeah.
In the franchise.
Almost apocryphal until yeah. Fast 5. Once yeah. we get some of those characters in for the other movies, it changes. But
now,
for a long time, I think Tokyo Drift was kind of the
It's a fun one.
Yeah.
It's got some cool driving in it.
Right.
Like
right.
The drifting. And then at the end, I hope you're sitting down. The lead character from Tokyo Drift goes to drag race a gentleman in Tokyo, and he rolls down the window to see who he's going to be drag racing against. And it's Vin Diesel.
Oh, snap.
He's back. He's back. So now we
nice.
Go to Fast and Furious, and now the gang's back together. O'Connor, Dom, Letty, they're all back together. And it's a pretty fun little movie.
Yeah. That's where it turned for me. I got to be honest. I kind of checked out on Too Fast, Too Furious and Tokyo Drift.
Agreed.
And then randomly caught Fast and Furious on like HBO or something.
And it was like, just
like, oh, yeah, this is what I remember.
So Fast and Furious is pretty much just an updated, cooler, more timeless version of the Fast and the
right.
Furious.
Yeah.
Now Fast 5, this is where it turns, okay? They decide no longer are we going to make racing movies, Kent.
Yeah.
We're going to make heist movies.
Right.
So randomly now they're just pulling heists.
Right. And they're really good at it.
They're good at it. And there's some driving involved. And then, like, you can't even believe, they introduce The Rock into the fold. And The Rock is the FBI agent that's been sent to track him down.
So is The Rock not in the original series?
No.
No, not until Fast 5.
Until 5.
Oh, wow.
it's, you know how The Rock was already jacked and then he took steroids and now he's crazy jacked?
Yeah.
That's kind of a good analogy for the series. It was right. already cut and awesome. And now we throw a little HGH into the fold in the form of The Rock. And now
we have a director who knows what he's doing.
Yeah, too. The director's really good and it's awesome. Kent, you got to catch up.
You know that Fred Raskin, the guy that Tarantino used for Django Unchained, he edited all the Fast and Furious movies.
Yeah, I did.
So Tarantino's new editor. Tarantino officially, I guess, likes the Fast and Furious movies.
I'd like to see Tarantino do a Fast and Furious.
I would like to see him do a car chase. Yeah,
that would be incredible. Yeah.
I was listening to somebody today on the radio. It was I was listening to the Corolla podcast. And he was talking about, there was that great Deion Sanders commercial at the Super Bowl this weekend. And if you watch, Deion Sanders is really good in that ad. He's like a really good actor. And Kroll was like, how much does it piss Vin Diesel off to watch that? And not only is this guy one of the greatest cover men and return men of all time, but he's also a better actor than you. And all you do is act.
And a great baseball player.
Yeah, and a great baseball player.
I think he's the only guy that scored a touchdown and hit a home run like in the same weekend or something.
He's the only player to ever, get a hit and score a touchdown like in the same weekend. And they were both like, one was in, he also scored in both playoffs or something. Pretty cool. Deion. Anyway, this is a movie podcast. We'll move on.
Yeah, exactly. Any other trailers you guys catch during the Super Bowl?
Oh man, I don't really remember what was there, Brian.
I remember
Oz the Great and Powerful. Which,
yeah, what do you guys think about that?
Also, was similar to me for as a Lone Ranger. It's a movie that I think looks just freaking terrible. Yeah. And but this I mean, it was a quick blurb. It was only like 30 seconds, but it was better looking than any of the other stuff has been so far.
So how much did they have to pay for the sets from Alice in Wonderland?
Right. I mean, that's what it looks like. It just looks like Alice in Wonderland, and I don't care for Alice in Wonderland at all. So
Alice in Wonderland
made like $1 billion.
Oh, yeah, so. Yeah, exactly.
And I have faith in Sam Raimi, though. Spider-Man 1 and 2 were so focused and tight and good.
Right.
And hopefully, I'm just hoping it can be something like that. Just a good movie, you know?
Yeah. I think that movie is an example of the downside of following all the rumors and the movie news and stuff like that, because I got really jacked up about it when it was going to be Robert Downey Jr. You know, Robert Downey Jr. originally was going to be the Wizard. And I was like, man, that sounds great. And it was like, okay, now it's Jude Law. And I was like, oh, okay, that's still sort of exciting, I guess. And now it's James Franco. And I don't know. I'm just not that enthused about it. But better spot. Super Bowl ad was better than any of the other stuff that they've shown. So
I agree. You heard, speaking of Alice in Wonderland, you know Tim Burton's next movie. You've heard about it?
I guess I have. I guess I missed that.
It is Pinocchio.
Oh.
And guess who is playing Geppetto?
If it's Johnny Depp, I'm going to quit this podcast right now.
No.
Why does Geppetto have white face paint?
You said his name. You said his name earlier. It is Robert Downey Jr. playing Geppetto.
Okay, that interests me. I made the declaration after the last Johnny Depp, Tim Burton experience that they needed to be banned from working with each other for a decade because it's gone bad.
I didn't even bother seeing Dark Shadows.
It's terrible.
It was just white face paint. Yeah, everything.
Oh, it's brutal. I mean, it was for me, it was one of the 10 worst movies of the year. So
absolutely with you, I haven't liked anything they've done since. Even Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, I didn't like.
Yeah, yeah. I like Charlie and the Chocolate Factory as a kids movie. I think it's all right. But they haven't done anything together that's worthwhile in, I don't know, maybe Edward Scissorhands. I don't know.
Ed Wood.
Ed Wood.
Yeah, and it was right when they both started selling promise without each other, right? So you have Burton does Big Fish, and it's just like this incredible movie. And Depp starts doing like pirates and some cool stuff. You know, what's the one where it's Finding Neverland, some interesting stuff. And they both like, wow, these two guys are kind of, they're done work with each other. They're both going in these cool, interesting directions. Then, nope, we're going right back to each other for the next 12 years.
Yeah. Yeah. But they just,
I feel maybe they own stock in a white face paint company.
That may be it. We may be
That's
got to
be it. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's got to be
so
it.
So they're just, they're slowly just pocketing hundreds of millions of dollars based off goth kids.
Yeah.
Hot Topic.
Own, yeah. That's it. They, yeah. They own Hot Topic stock. That's what it is.
Yeah. No, but Robert Downey Jr. with Tim Burton, that sounds interesting. Pinocchio doesn't really interest me that much, but I'll see anything with Robert Downey Jr. in it. I'm kind of a sucker for him. So
yeah.
Speaking of which, the other trailer that off the top of my head from Super Bowl was the Iron Man 3.
I was gonna mention that. Yeah.
Little teaser. And I don't know about y'all, I was disappointed. They talked that one up more than any other spot that we saw the whole, except for Fast Furious. They talked that one up pretty hard, and then it was like 10 seconds and we're done. I don't know.
I don't feel like they really showed anything that we hadn't seen in the other trailers. I still have high hopes for that. I mean, Iron Man might be my favorite trilogy outside of the Batman trilogy as far as superheroes.
And I really love Shane Black.
I love
his stuff. So I think this could be a really cool.
Yeah. And Kingsley.
Kiss, Kiss, Bang, Bang.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, that's one of my favorite, like, I keep using the word underrated, but I don't think anybody has seen that movie.
Yeah.
And that's a Shane Black, Robert Downey Jr. movie. That's the movie that got, if you don't know, that's the movie that kind of brought Robert Downey Jr. back to the forefront, and it's great. So I'm really stoked to see those two work together.
I mean, that movie's so influential in landing two great actors from the late 80s, early 90s into huge roles. So, I mean, it gets Robert Downey Jr. into Iron Man, and then it gets Val Kilmer into MacGruber.
Right. And I would say Val Kilmer probably got the better of that.
Yeah, I would say so too.
And I would think, I mean, that's an iconic villain. So, yeah,
exactly.
You know, but hey, Robert Downey Jr. made like $50 billion off of Avengers. So I guess it worked
out. Oh, yeah. He is Tony Stark. I mean, let's be honest.
Yeah. Yeah.
So yeah, he's more Tony Stark now than he is Robert Downey Jr.
Sure.
I'm really excited for Iron Man 3, though. High hopes. I mean, they haven't let me down yet, so no reason to not be excited. I wanted to mention Star Trek Into Darkness. They had that trailer. Did you guys see it?
Yes.
About ready to say that may be the best movie of the year. Just looking forward to the next 11 months. Man, every new second of footage that we get makes that just look
better. Hold on. Is there a Sex in the City this year?
I hope so. I mean, hopefully.
Okay, well, I'll hold out until I hear that news. But yes, tentatively, that looks like the best video.
Yeah. No, it really does. I mean, I wanted to mention this in movie news, too. Early screenings have come out of test screenings of Pacific Rim. And apparently it's a masterpiece. So
I'm blanking. What is Pacific Rim?
It is the Guillermo del Toro.
Oh, yes.
Robots against aliens. So aliens come out from the bottom of the ocean and we build robots to fight them. But apparently it's not done in a bad way, Michael Bay-esque way. It's apparently Rian Johnson, the director of Looper, was at a screening and he was just like, tweeting, just gushing about it. So
like, Guillermo signed on for like, Del Toro signed on for like 10 movies like 4 years ago.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
All awesome sounding. But one of my favorite books of all time is Slaughterhouse-5. And he's like, he's been attached to that. And I just want him to do it so badly. So hopefully this movie like gets him going on something like that. Because then he signed on for Lord of the Rings. And then he backed out.
You know, he turned down Star Wars. They actually
approached him.
He would be a great one to do a standalone at some point.
I love the Hellboy series.
I always wanted him to do a Harry Potter. He was always rumored there for a couple years, and I was always really wanting him to do it because he works with Carrion a lot, and he did that. He did Prisoner of Azkaban, which is probably my favorite Harry Potter movie.
Sure.
And I was always hoping Del Toro was. Yeah, I'd love to see him in some sort of series role.
Right. Yeah. Well, I'm glad to see all the positive notice is coming out of the screenings, because I gotta be honest, the trailer looked horrible to me. The first Pacific Rim trailer, it just looked like a Michael Bay movie.
It looks like so cheesy, but I mean, you look at it and you're like, wow, that looks like it could be good, but it's probably gonna be cheesy. The fact that it's getting such good reviews, it makes me so excited. It's gonna be like one of those surprise hits, you know, like landmark films. Hopefully. There's a lot of sci-fi. Elysium too, apparently, is gonna The Neil
Blomkamp.
That's the
one that I can't wait for. That looks incredible.
That does. Blomkamp's really good.
Yeah. And teaming him with Matt Damon is just that's the stuff of dreams, my friends.
It really is. Any other movie news you guys want to mention before we move on to our review of Lincoln?
That's all I got.
That's all I got. All right.
I did see a movie this week. Do we want to talk about that? Or
yeah, go ahead.
Okay. Did y'all see anything? I'm sorry, I'm totally breaking into the middle of the podcast, but
did y'all see
anything else?
I did see a movie, but I was going to wait till our weekly recommends after our review.
Okay. You know what? I'll do the same because I didn't watch anything else that was worthwhile this week that I like 30 Rock or something like that. So, yeah, I can do the same thing.
Okay. Well, stay tuned. Stay tuned after the review for our weekly recommends. Coming up next is our review of Lincoln.
Hey, ma'am, fam, question for you. Do you own a small business or are you a boss? Are you looking to hire awesome people but you just can't find somebody to fill that role? Well, let me tell you about ZipRecruiter.com. With ZipRecruiter, you can post your job to 100 plus job sites all with one click. In fact, over 80% of jobs posted on ZipRecruiter get a qualified candidate in just 24 hours. Find out today why ZipRecruiter has been used by businesses of all sizes to find the most qualified job candidates with immediate results. That's why ZipRecruiter is different. Unlike other job sites, ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them. Right now, you can post your jobs for free on ZipRecruiter by going to ZipRecruiter.com/Matt. That's ZipRecruiter.com/Matt. One more time, try it for free. Go to ZipRecruiter.com/Matt. Thanks to ZipRecruiter for supporting this episode of the Mad About Movies podcast. Hey, what's up, ma'am, fam? Kent here. And yes, if you're hearing from me, you know it's time to talk about Blue Apron. If you haven't tried out Blue Apron by now, what the heck are you even doing? Blue Apron is the number one fresh ingredient and recipe delivery service in the country. They deliver fresh meals straight to your door. All the food is fresh, it's sourced from local farms, and there's no wasted ingredients. I've been a Blue Apron subscriber for a long time now. And they have still, to this day, never let me down. There's tons of variety. Some featured upcoming meals include summer vegetable and egg paninis, soy glazed pork and rice cakes, skillet vegetable chili with cheddar drop biscuits, holy crap, and garlic butter shrimp and corn with green bean salad. So take it from me. Try out Blue Apron now. Go to blueapron.com/mad. That's blueapron.com/mad. Get 3 meals on us for free. Nothing goes better with a movie than dinner. So check out Blue Apron, blueapron.com/mad. Blue Apron, a better way to cook.
Abraham Lincoln has asked us to work with him to accomplish the death of slavery.
No one's ever been loved so much by the people. Don't waste that power.
This fight is for the United States of America.
Think we choose to be born, or we fit it to the times we're born into.
All right, guys, let's discuss and just talk about the first time we saw this. How many times have you seen it, Richard?
Lincoln, I've only seen once, so I will probably take a back seat to you guys, but I'll still chime in with, you know, political theory.
Right.
I've also only seen it once, so.
Okay. I have seen it, I think, 3 times.
Wow.
I saw it twice in the theater, and I watched the screener version too.
So I haven't seen, I only saw Lincoln once, but I did see Polk 3 times.
About James K. Polk.
Yeah.
Yeah. Who plays him?
He's played by, it's kind of like Bob Dylan and I'm Not There. There's about 7 different actors that play him.
Wow.
And, is it sad that I had to think about who James Polk was for a second? Like that's how
that
far
is sad right actually.
Yeah.
I'm just kidding.
And I was a history major for a while, so that's really how well I'm doing.
So you guys have only seen it each one time. Just
combined
give me your
2 times.
Combined 2 times. So just give me your Richard, just give me your overall thoughts of the film. Kind of give me your expectations and thoughts about it.
So my expectations were very high. Right, I would say, I mean, inordinately high for as far as quality.
Of course, yeah.
I would say that it met
for the right reasons.
Yes, absolutely. I would say that it met my expectations 98%.
Sure.
So it's definitely an A. It's definitely an A, maybe even an A+. But I was expecting like an A quadruple plus. So that's not fair to the film. Brian can attest, and he agrees with me on this somewhat, but probably not to the extent that I agree with. I love James Spader, one of my favorite actors.
Right. Just
always classic to me. Love him and everything. And so I was really pumped at his part in this movie. Obviously, Daniel Day-Lewis. I mean, like, that's like saying, you know, when you break down the like 1996 Bulls,
yeah,
or 97 Bulls, you don't talk that much about Michael Jordan because it's just like, yeah, okay, we know.
Right.
That's understood. Right. We're not going to – well, let's talk about the Steve Kerrs.
Yeah.
The
Bison Dealies of the
yeah,
world.
Yeah, the Judd Bushlers, yeah. Kukoc, Scottie Pippen. So, you know, that's what we're doing here, or at least what I'm doing. I mean, there's nothing I can say that hasn't already been said. I thought the direction was probably Spielberg's best since maybe Munich.
Yeah.
As far as the pacing of it, I just thought it was really well done.
Okay, which films has he done since Munich besides War Horse?
He did the
War of the Worlds in 2005.
Adventures of Tintin.
Tintin.
Have y'all seen that?
Indiana Jones.
Love that. Indiana Jones. That doesn't exist. That fourth movie, that didn't happen. So
he did do Indiana Jones. Wow. I keep forgetting about Indy 4.
So I would say probably since – actually maybe even since Catch Me If You Can. So that includes Terminal World Awards in Munich.
Yeah.
And just the pacing of the movie. It's just really well done. Some people thought it was slow, and I guess – I mean, look, we're talking about a movie about, you know, mid-19th century America. It's not – I mean, there's not going to be alien attacks or anything. But I thought it was just beautifully paced. It's really an intelligent movie. It takes a presidency and a historical era, if you want to talk about the Civil War, and really kind of, you know, puts it into two hours. And that's really hard to do, and he does it really well, and it's just a great movie.
Okay. Brian, thoughts?
Yeah, I think that's – I think he pretty much said just about everything. I had slightly lower expectations first, than you.
This is all Brian's going to contribute to this podcast.
Yeah.
Just talk first and then act like a genius.
Yeah.
Right, exactly. I had slightly lower expectations than you guys just because it's a biopic, and biopics are hit or miss for me most of the time. I think it's hard to do a great biopic without letting it get kind of boring. And I'd say I was not bored at all. I thought, like you said, the pacing was great. I really didn't – people – I heard the same comments of it's kind of slow, and I didn't get that at all. I thought it was about as good as it gets from a biopic standpoint. I thought, obviously, Daniel Day-Lewis was incredible. He's definitely going to deserve the Oscar that he gets in a few weeks. And I think I agree with the comments about Spielberg. It was good to see him return. I hate to say return to form, but I hate War Horse, and the fourth Indiana Jones movie is an abomination. And so, other than animated with Tintin, which is really good, he hasn't done a really good movie in a while. So I was stoked to see him bring that classic Spielbergianness, you know, to the movie. I thought he did a great job, and the supporting actors were great. I'm with you on Spader. Spader was so great.
Yeah,
that's one of my. Richard kind of turned me on to Spader's greatness a couple of years ago, and I mean that was he was great. I mean, you just put him in the role where he can just be kind of shady and gross, and he
exactly
you know he's shady and gross in real life. So.
The thing about Spader is he doesn't have a whole lot of range,
right?
But the thing he does, he kills it.
Yeah.
He does one trick and he nails it. Right. Okay,
he's really good at being shady, and he's really good at getting turned on by car accidents.
Exactly. Everything he says is somehow sexual. Like, he can say, like, I'm going to run down to Wendy's, probably get a number two.
Yeah.
You'd be like, man, that deviant. But so, I mean, he just does it really well. Right. The thing I'll say about this movie, and Brian, I don't mean to cut you off, but I think you'll have some interesting thoughts on it. So this movie in itself, right, is based off of Team of Rivals, the Doris Kearns Goodwin book.
Right.
And it in itself is kind of a team of rivals, and not so much rivals, but a lot of weird people you wouldn't expect to really work together as far as the actors. And then you have Tony Kushner writing the script, who's this sort of, you know, like this – he's political in a way, but a lot of his stuff is – very social commentary of modern times, a lot of things with homosexual agenda and things like that. So kind of an odd choice to pick to adapt a Lincoln biography. And right. A lot of different stuff that I think that – but that all led to how good it is. Picking the guy that wrote Angels in America to write the Lincoln biography is kind of an odd choice on Spielberg's part.
Right.
But kind of like Lincoln's choices for Cabinet were sort of an odd choices. So it kind of is an interesting how art imitates life in a way.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with that. And I thought it was I didn't know really what to expect going in. I mean, you see the trailers and all that stuff, and so I didn't really do any research going in. Usually I have a feel for, okay, this is what the movie's going to be about, but yeah. I just assume it's just going to be, you know, Lincoln's life or whatever. Yeah. It's really not. I mean, it has much more to do with the passing of the amendment, and I think that's partly, for me at least, that's what made it move at such a good pace and kept it from getting slow or anything. Cause any of these points where in a normal biopic, you might kind of get bogged down in, you know, now I've got to show, Ray Charles doing heroin, you know, things like that. That just kind of, okay, here we go. We're just a little slowing down here.
So most biopics you have trying to explain the micro of a person,
right,
through the macro, through telling their whole life story, the exact opposite. It's telling the macro story of what Lincoln meant through a tiny little micro, what is it, 6 months or however long this movie takes place over, a little story. And that's a really interesting and kind of a brave choice, and really, really works. Because I feel like I knew Lincoln. You know, I didn't have to grow up with him and watch him chop down his first tree and stuff to get to know him. I got to know him through – his actions during this time. That's all I really need to know about him.
Right, right.
Okay.
Ken?
Trying to gather my thoughts here.
Yeah. I could ramble for a little longer.
Let me just say this. Along with Richard, my expectations for this film were off the charts. Like, didn't even fit on a scale of if there was a scale for a movie hype in my eyes. Spielberg might be my favorite director next to the Coen brothers. Mm-hmm. So anything he does, I'm naturally always excited for.
Right.
And then I hear that he's been working 9 years with Daniel Day-Lewis on a Lincoln biopic, knowing that Daniel Day-Lewis is not an actor that takes a lot of roles.
Right.
And
by the way, Daniel Day-Lewis is starring in Fast and the Furious 7.
Yeah,
exactly. Well,
he's playing the Paul Walker character. Yeah.
And so having said all that, my expectations were extraordinarily high. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. I've seen the movie 3 times, and I am not sure if I like it.
That's interesting.
Every individual part of it is a masterpiece, like every individual character, but I'm not sure if all the characters together work. I don't know if James Spader was just shoehorned in there a little bit, maybe for comic relief. I don't know what overall his character contributes to the passing of the amendment. I don't know. Maybe you guys can fill me in there.
Just historically.
Yeah, I didn't know if his character contributed much to the overall story of the movie.
I mean, a little bit in that he's supposed to show kind of the context of the kind of shady lobbyist of the time.
Yeah.
And he's a friend, but also he's trying to get his things through the legislature, these methods, and so I think he's a microcosm of trying to show that Washington hasn't changed a whole lot. So, yes, it's a little bit of social commentary. It's a little bit of political commentary. Is it necessary for the narrative? Absolutely not. I will come back at you and say a little bit, though. I think it is necessary for kind of the overall artistic piece of the movie to create some historical context. That's all.
Right, but yes, and I agree there, but
as far as pure narrative goes, it's completely superficial and superfluous. I mean, it doesn't really
right.
not need to be there. But, you know, I mean, do you really need Vin Diesel and Paul?
Why do you need both?
Awesome,
yeah.
You get both.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Brian? And now you get The Rock.
And so I would say, as far as my favorite Spielberg films, this film does not rank in the top five. Okay. What about y'all? Does it rank up there with y'all?
Oh, wow.
It doesn't for me. But
a lot of people I know have said it might be their favorite Spielberg movie ever.
Wow.
This movie, to me, I cannot watch it. I can't rewatch this movie. It's not a movie I want to sit down and be like, hey, let's put on Lee. I mean, it's...
Yeah, I agree with that. That's,
it's
I
a
mean,
very
me.
Educational movie. And it's
sure.
very...
sure.
I don't know... what word I can use to describe that other than educational?
Yeah, well, you, Kit and I talked on the radio show about Lincoln, and I kept it out of my top 10 for the year because to me it's not rewatchable. I might watch it one more time, you know, in a year or two when it's on HBO or something, but I don't want to sit down and watch it 100 more times like I usually do with the Spielberg movie. But you know, it's so well put together. It's so informative. I think. The performances are so strong that, I mean, I think it deserves all the adoration and the attention that it's getting. But is it a top five Spielberg movie for me? No. But that's, you know, if I were to list my top 10 favorite movies of all time, there would probably be, I mean, any movie, top 10, I would bet there would be three or four Spielberg movies in that top 10. I mean, so
your top five Spielberg are obviously going to be Crystal Skull.
That doesn't exist, but sure.
Crystal Skull. I'm just trying to go
1941.
Through 1941.
1941.
The Tiny Toon Adventures.
Yeah.
You know, as a producer.
Sure.
Who Framed Roger Rabbit.
And Transformers.
Yeah. And Transformers, yeah. That's what I would say. In the Twilight Zone movie where that guy died.
Yeah, that's about right. Sure. Maybe The Terminal mixed in there for good measure.
Yeah, like exactly.
Yeah,
maybe
no,
something
I mean,
evil.
The three Indiana Jones movies that are actually part of the canon, and Jaws and Saving Private Ryan are all going to be probably in my top 10 any movie of all time. So,
yeah.
You know, is it better than those movies for me? No, but at the same time, you know, it's hard for me to compare one Spielberg movie to the other Spielberg movies and say, well, it's not as good as these. Well, okay. But that's, you know, Michael Jordan had a few seasons that were better than his best. You know what I mean? Like it's tough to put that weight on it and say, well, it's not Jaws or it's not Indiana Jones or whatever. I think it did everything that it set out to do.
Yeah.
And did it very well with enough style to make it enjoyable as well as informative and inspirational. And that's that honest. I mean, that's what I expected from the movie. So, but you guys, like you said, you had higher expectations, I think, than I did. So
the fact that this movie is not going to win Best Picture, because it won't. And if it does, I will be appalled and shocked, but I don't know if you guys agree with that, but the fact that it's not going to win Best Picture and doesn't deserve to in my eyes it's disappointing because it had so much potential. And even War Horse, you look at the trailer and you're like, wow, Spielberg plus a horse. Wow, that has potential to be something really great. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's just disappointing. But I will say that Daniel Day-Lewis's performance is incredible. I mean, you can't say enough good things about him, but – besides that, Sally Field is a little bit, I mean, just on and on and on, just griping and griping.
Right.
I really wanted Abraham to just take his hand and just at a few points in the movie. But I love Tommy Lee Jones. Love him. And I thought he outshone Daniel Day-Lewis. Richard, thoughts on that?
I wouldn't agree with that, but he was very good. I wouldn't go with the outshone him.
I wouldn't either. I think Daniel Day-Lewis had, if not the best performance of any actor of the year, then I might put him behind. I love Jessica Chastain in Zero Dark Thirty so much that I might put her ahead of Daniel Day-Lewis. But other than that, just from a pure performance standpoint, I thought Daniel Day-Lewis was – the best of the year. But kind of playing into what you said, Kent, we knew that was going to happen. You know, yep. I mean, if Daniel Day-Lewis is going to do a movie other than that, what was that? Nine.
The musical. Yeah,
Why
was he in that? Did he owe somebody a movie?
Surely it was a favor of some sort, or he was just really drunk and didn't know that he was in it or something. I mean, you knew he was going to be great. So, it's almost you don't appreciate it because you just know, man, I mean, it's Daniel Day-Lewis. He's playing the most well-known American of all time. So, okay, this is going to be awesome. You know, I will say this. If I do watch the movie again in a year or two, I expect that I think it's a movie that you will appreciate at least the performance of the lead performance more, you know, a year or two removed from the anticipation than you do now.
It's a movie that probably will be shown in every high school.
Yeah.
For the rest of time, and that will probably be its fate. And that's you're right. That's somewhat disappointing for the hype. It might just be the like political nerd in me, because you both know that's a huge passion of mine. So maybe I just enjoyed maybe that's why I enjoyed it more than most.
I'm going to cut you off for just a second, but I hate politics. There's nothing in this world that I hate more than political banter, maybe other than like John Travolta, but I hate politics, and I was enthralled for the
bad
whole
news
of
John,
that
John
Congress
Travolta
session
playing Bill O'Reilly.
Yeah, I will not
and
watch that.
I don't want the overall opinion that people get from this, from me saying that it's not a good picture. I'm just saying,
sure.
I mean, even if you get a 95 on a test, you still get five questions wrong or whatever.
Sure.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so I'm just trying to point out the areas which disappointed me. And I'm sure there are areas that disappointed you guys. So what are some areas that you didn't like? I mean, there's had to be some things that you didn't enjoy about the movie.
Brian, you can go first this time.
Sally Field in general annoys me. That character was kind of a – yeah, that's an annoying character. She's supposed to be annoying. So in some ways, they cast the perfect person because Sally Field just drives me up the wall. But so I don't know if that was a disappointment, but she kind of drove me a little nuts. I could have probably used a little more of – I felt like we tried too hard to make an emotional impact with Lincoln's the maid or whatever that worked in the White House for him. I felt like that was a little forced. There's a couple of moments in there where you can tell he's really trying to push the emotional envelope, you know.
Everything okay?
My dog has a cold, so she's just freaking out in the background here. Sorry about that, listeners. I felt like there's a couple moments where he's trying to push the emotional envelope based around her character, and I didn't have any real emotions attached to her. You know what I mean? She kind of was a meh character for the most part. So I could have used a little bit more there. That's really all I've got. I mean, those are small complaints, you know, over the course of a 3-hour movie. That's, you know, if that's the worst I can say about it, then I feel all right.
I will say, as far as the movie goes and as far as all that, I really have no complaints about. I mean, it's just really well done. It's really tight. It's beautifully shot, as all of his things have been since Schindler's List. By things, I mean movies. Let's speak correctly here, Richard. But I will say there are a few historical inaccuracies. There's some over-dramatizations of things and over-simplifications of a few things, which were mildly annoying.
Yeah.
But that's just what you're going to do when you make a 2-hour movie about one of the most important human, not just American history moments, but, post-Renaissance, post-Enlightenment historical moments is this 13th Amendment. So I certainly understand that things are going to be dramatized to make sense and left out to save time and all that. So those are really only my criticisms. There's no performance. Honestly, Tommy Lee Jones was great, really effective. He's always kind of Tommy Lee Jones, but that's fine. We all like that. But Daniel Day-Lewis just, I mean, gosh – you know, somebody that has read so much about Lincoln, and this is the best thing I can say about this performance. I had such a clear idea of who Lincoln was and what he sounded like and what he walked like and things. And I will say that it was very wrong compared to this Daniel Day-Lewis performance. But instead of really arguing it in my brain, now when I think of Lincoln, I think of Daniel Day-Lewis, which is really the best compliment you can give of thing. I've gone back and read some writings. I've got this really cool kind of civics classics of books. So we've got like the Declaration of Independence and things like that. Thomas Paine's writes, and man, my girlfriend got me this little set, some Penguin set, and there's this book of Lincoln speeches, and sometimes I'll read them before I go to bed because I am the coolest person on the planet. And now I read them with that voice, and it's so distinct, and it seemed from the minute you saw it, from the minute I saw it, although it was not what had been in my head throughout my whole life, it immediately rang authentic and true. And how great is that?
Right. Yeah, exactly. I will say this, and then we'll go into spoilers, but I felt like 90% of the credit that 90 to 99% of the credit that Daniel Day-Lewis got for the performance was based solely on the fact that he looks exactly like Abraham Lincoln.
Yeah.
Thoughts on that?
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Yeah. I would agree with that.
Okay. All right. Well, spoilers coming up right now for Lincoln. All right, guys, let's talk about the ending. Everyone knows what happens at the how, you know, Abraham Lincoln died or whatever. And we know that Spielberg was going to depict this somehow in the movie.
Right.
And I will say that I was severely disappointed, I will say, in the way it was depicted. A moment such as the killing of the best president in the United States history, done by Spielberg, you know, being the third act and all, or the climax of the movie, you would think that he would have put more into it. Do you guys agree with that at all? Like what there could have been such tragedy or chaos surrounding that moment that he got shot and that people found out he got shot, and the chaos in the theater, people rushing out of the theater, you know, the people taking Lincoln's body out, trying to revive him, all that. It feels like he shot the sequence and then he cut it down into a trailer sized, scene, you know, he gave us the highlights, but he didn't give us, I didn't feel the sadness there.
Yeah,
that I wanted to feel, because they had been building up this character, and all you really get in the end is a guy coming out on stage going, "The president's been shot," and then they cut to his body, his dead body, right. And that's the end.
I agree with that.
You know what I mean? I wish we would have gotten the assassination scene, the John Wilkes Booth busting into the thing, shooting Lincoln, and Sally Field like crying over his body and all that. You know, I wanted that.
I'll say the same thing. I was disappointed by that, but I'll go the exact opposite. I think that it could have ended. The best ending for the movie would have been, as you know, the scene right before that is him looking for his gloves and getting his hat on, and he walks out of the White House, and his butler, you know, just kind of watches him walk away, and he kind of fades out into the shadow. I thought it should have ended right there. I thought that was the perfect way to end it, because just kind of what you're saying there, I don't think there was a way you could have done the actual assassination and have it live up to the emotional expectation that we're all going to have associated with it. You know what I mean? Because it's such a well-known moment in history that you almost can't do it and do it justice, you know? And so I think if it had ended right at that point, you know, he walks out of the house, it kind of fades to black, and, you know, then we get – maybe even comes back afterwards with the speech that's at the end of the movie, would have been fine. I thought that just having that scene in there in the first place, with his kid watching the play and having them, you know, come out on stage and all that stuff, I thought it was almost anticlimactic.
Yeah, I agree. I totally agree there. Could have been more. Could have been so much more. Richard, thoughts on that?
So I have sort of a philosophical thought on it, not necessarily a cinematographical thought. That's not a word, but it is now.
Cinematographical?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So when you think of Lincoln, when you grow up learning about Lincoln, you immediately think of the assassination. So Lincoln and Kennedy, maybe to a lesser extent McKinley. But you think of these assassinations. So you have and so to not show it is I kind of took as a way respect. To sort of a respect for the man, and then also a way to sort of take that power away from it. And that this movie is about a great man, a great leader, a great president who, yes, was assassinated, but this is not the defining moment of his life.
Sure.
The defining moment of his life is what we just covered for 2 hours. So in a way of shortening that and really not putting much emphasis on it, I think now when you think of that movie, you don't think about the death of Lincoln. You think about the life and the life that he gave to others. So in that sense, I really kind of like the choice to kind of brush over it. I certainly understand. I mean, we all want to see it because you want to be it's the passion of the Christ phenomenon. Understand it intimately.
It's almost like Titanic, a historical event. Like, say Titanic ends, they hit the iceberg, and then Titanic ends. Like, oh, we all know how it ends. The ship sank. You know what I mean? It's like the pandemonium that surrounded that moment, the emotion of losing people you love. And I wanted to feel that at the end. I wanted to see the people crying. I wanted to see them weeping over his body and the doctors to try to revive him and all that, you know, and the how it was truly a tragedy.
And I get that, and I'm with you.
And I agree there that Spielberg probably was doing it out of respect. Mm-hmm. And people had the same complaints. Spoilers here coming up for Zero Dark Thirty. But the fact that they don't show Osama getting shot, I mean, they don't even really give you that pleasure.
Yeah, and that's a little more cathartic.
That's a little more
people
cathartic.
Want to see. But I think that being so much closer to real life, they have.
I wanted to see the bullet going literally piercing the person's head.
Yeah,
but I just wanted more. I mean, it felt like that sequence lasted 1 minute of the entire movie, and you're like, what?
Yeah,
it all led up to that.
You want that intimate understanding of what it was like to be there that day. No, I get that. And that's totally valid. And
maybe shown his funeral a little bit more. Yeah. You know, all that. Any more thoughts on Lincoln, guys?
No.
No, I think that about does it.
Okay. Well, I'm sure Lincoln will be out soon on video on demand, all that. DVD goodness, and I'm sure it's out in theaters right now, so you should probably see it before the Oscars.
Yeah,
because it'll probably
still clinging on to that top 10 spot in on the box office.
It's made a ton of money.
Yeah, it really has. Yeah,
I really don't think it's gonna win Best Picture though. I'll say that.
I thought it was because Affleck and Bigelow didn't get nominated for director.
The
number of awards that Argo has won. The last couple of weeks, I don't see any way that it's not going to win Best Picture, and deservingly so. But I thought it was setting its. I thought the Academy was setting itself up for like a Lincoln, just you know, taking every award that it possibly could. But now I don't see how they're gonna keep Argo from winning. So
I still have hope for Beasts of the Southern Wild.
You think?
I think that might be the artist of this year. It might just surprise people. And
I just don't think enough people have seen it, man.
I feel like the people that have, though, like especially Academy people,
I just don't. I mean, the artist got such a huge push towards the end of its you know, once the nomination came out and everything. Beast is not, to me, is not seeing the same. The same sort of phenomenon, I guess, that the artist was. I mean, the artist was clearly going to win.
I just have hope. I just still have hope. You can still have hope.
Yeah, I would love to see Beast of the Southern Wild win over Lincoln, but I think it's going to be Argo. That's there's just so many. I mean, it's picked up every award that it could possibly win at this point. So I don't see how it's going to get left out. But
if I was to bet money, I would definitely say Argo at this point.
Yeah. We'll do a Academy Awards podcast right before the award actually gets here.
We should. We'll do one maybe afterward too, discussing the winners.
Yeah.
So, all right, let's move on to our weekly recommends.
Okay.
Richard, what do you want to recommend this week?
I'm going first. Come on.
Okay, let's Brian. Brian, right. Well, you said you saw a movie. What movie did you see?
Yeah, I'll recommend a movie I saw in theaters just opened this weekend, and that's the zombie romantic comedy Warm Bodies.
Okay.
Written and directed by Jonathan Levine, who did 50-50 from
2000. Oh, really? I didn't know that. Cool.
Yeah, and that is 50-50 is one of my favorite movies of the last decade. It's phenomenal. So Warm Bodies is not quite up to that standard, but it's a lot of fun. It handles its concept very well. Anytime you get a high concept piece like that, where it's, you know, obviously a zombie that, you know, comes back to life basically to fall in love, it's a risky thing to go into and do, correctly. But they do a good job of handling the material and making it enjoyable and making you care about this character right from the get go. Real funny, very smart. It's very lighthearted, and just really enjoyed it a lot. So I definitely recommend it. It was number one at the box office this weekend, but, if you haven't seen it, it's not, if you're not a fan of horror movies or zombie movies or anything like that, which I'm with you. I'm not a horror movie guy either. It's really not, it's not in any kind of way a horror movie.
It's kind of in the vein of Zombieland a little bit.
It is, but even Zombieland, I mean, Zombieland's kind of gruesome at times. Yeah. I mean, comedically, but still a lot of blood and guts and stuff like that. This is definitely the PG-13 version of that. I mean, it's played down, and it's much more of a romantic comedy than it is anything else. So
this the trailer reminded me of Scott Pilgrim. Does it have that kind of vibe?
Sure. Yeah, that's a fair comparison as far as tone and style and all that stuff. Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
And I love that, you know, I've loved that guy. I don't know his name, but he was Marcus in About a Boy.
Yeah, Nicholas Holt. Yeah.
He was in X-Men, too.
Yeah, he's in X-Men, dates Jennifer Lawrence.
Right.
Yeah. But About a Boy is one of my all-time favorite movies, and so watching him kind of grow up is cool for me.
Sure, yeah. It's very good, and Rob Corddry is in it, too. And
nice.
I love Rob Corddry. As long as he's in a role like this where he's only in the movie or the TV, you know, he's only in it for 10 or 20 minutes, he's great for 20 ridiculous minutes. Anything more than that, you kind of get tired of him, but it's a fun little role for him too, so check it out. It's definitely worth your time.
That's good to hear. Great, thanks Brian. Richard, weekly recommend, sir.
Man, this is tough because I've kind of been on a I've been working a lot, so I've been kind of on a media what is this I send out. I will recommend a TV show. Kind of a funny little show called The Burn.
Okay, I never heard of this.
The Burn is Jeff Ross, the Roastmaster General show.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, I didn't really care about it that much. I love Jeff Ross. I think he's a funny writer, good joke writer, which is kind of a rare talent these days. So I caught this show a couple weeks ago, and the joke, I don't know if it's him or his writing staff, they're really crisp, really funny, kind of original jokes. And the format of the show's really funny, where they kind of take a topic and burn it. You know, it's not just a person. Uh-huh. It's essentially like just a mean-spirited Daily Show or something like that. Yeah. It's just kind of it's a fun 20 minutes. You'll laugh a lot, and I recommend it.
Great.
Interesting.
Well, I have two recommends this week.
Okay.
I'll go with the movie first. February 1st, a documentary came out called Sound City. Are you guys familiar?
Oh, yes. I'm sitting in my on-demand queue. I'm probably going to get it this week.
Same here. I'm going to watch it tonight or tomorrow.
Cool. Great. Well, so you guys know what I'm talking about. It is directed the directorial debut of Nirvana Foo Fighters member Dave Grohl. And it's about a recording studio called Sound City Studios in L.A., which recorded bands like Fleetwood Mac, Tom Petty, Nirvana, Rage Against the Machine, etc. And so it's basically, it just talks about the studio and Dave Grohl's love for the studio and all these bands' love for this particular soundboard that was at the studio that had such a signature sound. And it's Dave Grohl's love affair with this studio, and he buys the soundboard. And so he opens his own studio with the soundboard, and then he invites all the artists back to record an album together, like a collaborative album.
Sure.
And so, man, if you're a fan of rock and roll, this movie is definitely a must see. Really, really, really well put together. Gives you, I mean, each band that they talk about, you could do a documentary on.
Yeah, absolutely.
The stuff on Fleetwood Mac was awesome.
The Fleet.
The stuff on the Fleet, as Richard and I like to call them. The Petty stuff was great. If you've seen the Foo Fighters documentary Back and Forth, I don't know if you guys have seen it, but that's also really good. But I would say Sound City is better. It's so good.
Even Rick Springfield comes out and jams.
Rick Springfield. Oh man, they do a jam session. Yeah, it's the members of the Foo Fighters with Rick Springfield singing and playing guitar.
He's a rocker, man.
It's great. Oh wow, it sounds like the Foo Fighters with Rick Springfield. I mean,
that's awesome.
That's great.
And they do a song with Queens of the Stone Age, Josh Homme, mm-hmm. and Trent Reznor and Dave Grohl do a song, all three of them, and it's electrifying. And the Paul McCartney song, I don't know if you guys watched the Sandy benefit when they all performed, but they basically
been on Saturday Night Live too.
Right. They basically show them writing that song.
Very cool.
For like the probably the last, I would say, quarter of the movie is them writing and recording that song, Paul McCartney and the surviving members of Nirvana. And man, it's so good. Just really, really well done and awesome. And I'm big into music. So I really want to watch it again, but I keep delaying it because I don't want to get tired of it. It's so really exciting.
I still don't know if I'm going to be home tomorrow evening or not. If I am, that's probably what I'll be doing, is watching that movie.
Yeah, I definitely recommend it. It's on iTunes. You can buy it DRM free on the soundcitymovie.com, where you can burn a DVD of it and give it to people and all that. So definitely check that out.
Cool.
And TV show I wanted to recommend. I'm sure you guys have probably seen it. I just got into it on Netflix. It's a BBC show called Sherlock.
Oh yeah, I've heard that's awesome. I haven't seen it yet though.
Brian, have you seen Sherlock?
I've seen the first series. So the first three episodes.
What are your thoughts?
It's amazing. It's one of those phenomena, you know, people just talked about it so much. And so in my weird rebel brain, it was, well, that can't be good, you know, because everybody loves this. And I finally watched it and was completely mesmerized. I mean, it's both of the lead actors, Benedict Cumberbatch, who plays the bad guy in the upcoming Star Trek movie, and Martin Freeman, who played Bilbo in The Hobbit. Both of them are incredible. It's, you know, it's obviously it's Sherlock and Dr. Watson, and the chemistry that they have, that the two of those guys have, is ridiculous. From the first scene. I mean,
is it as good as Johnny Lee Miller and Lucy Liu?
Yes,
that's actually based on this. Yeah, it is.
Yeah, and that show sucks, and it should not exist. Anytime anybody says, "Oh yeah, I like, you know, I'm watching Elementary," I just want to yell at them and say, "No, just go. It's on Netflix. It's right there. Just go watch the real thing. It's so much ridiculously better." No, I'm with you, man. I haven't watched the second series yet because I just haven't had time to actually sit down and pay attention to it. But it was talked up so much to me from everybody I know, basically, and it still was better than I expected. So
yeah, I agree. My expectations are high, and I will say this show might be the best show I've ever seen non-comedy.
Wow. That's strong.
I mean, it's flawless. Really.
Right. But how does it compare to CSI Miami? Is that, I mean,
I really haven't seen any of the CSIs. I mean, I'm going to be honest.
Just kidding.
Each episode is 82 minutes. So it's basically.
That sure was a lock. Take off sunglasses.
So each episode is basically a movie.
Right.
And as soon as I watched it for about the first 10 minutes, I completely forgot about the Robert Downey Jr. Jude Law Sherlock Holmes movie. I was like,
sure.
Benedict Cumberbatch is Sherlock Holmes. You know, when you're watching this, he's so convincing, delivers these lines with such confidence, and it's just
– he has such a great
name. This guy is going to be is going to be the big actor of our generation. He's him and Michael Fassbender. I mean, they're neck and neck as far as upcoming actors in my
right.
eyes.
Yeah, he's about to completely blow up. He's in obviously, like you said, a Star Trek movie. He's also is going to play a major part of one of the Hobbit movies too. So
he's Smaug. Yeah.
So that guy, it's great. He's great. The show is great. That's a good recommend, Kent.
It's a very futuristic. I mean, the way it's shot, the way the script is written, the way the titles go across the screen. I mean, Brian, you'll know what I'm talking about. Like, they have titles go across the screen, like in the middle of the show, but they're like in the scene, like in the way that Zombieland does it, and Scott Pilgrim, these graphics that are like in the
tell
scene.
You what, I'll try to hammer out that season series one this week, because
just watch the first episode and you'll be hooked. I mean, it's so well done, so good. So yeah, definitely check out Sherlock if you have Netflix. Watch instantly.
Awesome.
It's awesome.
All right, guys. I got
all right, gentlemen. All right, gentlemen.
Fun, guys.
It's been fun.
Can we find you on Twitter?
You can find me on Twitter at Kent Garrison, KENT, like Superman Garrison with two R's. Richard.
You can find me at Richard Barden or RichardBarden.com.
Brian.
And you can find me at BGill12 on Twitter and at TheSoapBoxOffice.com for movie reviews and other ridiculousness.
All right, guys. Thanks for joining me, and thanks for being here. And we'll see everyone next week at the cinema.